Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient, and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees, so I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in 2 orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the best-selling true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing pretty good, man.
Awesome. I had a rough day at work, but then my wife got a letter from the IRS, so I guess we'll learn how an audit goes down this week. That'll be fun, but I'm not going to dwell on that. We have some big news to announce, so where are we at?
Well, first I wanted to start by thanking some people over in Japan. Catherine and Kaz helped me out with a request that I had, a translation request, so thank you very much. Cool. And then this is very relevant to this episode, but I wanted to thank Jim Pyre for his legal opinions and his feedback regarding this episode we'll be covering. In a nutshell, I just asked him to put together how he would have approached this case had he been in Zach's corner. We often hear that someone didn't have good counsel or that the counsel was ineffective. It was just interesting reading what he had put together for us. So we'd like to thank Jim again for that.
Cool.
Now, the big news is that we wanted to do a meetup, a meet and greet. We've had requests, and thanks to Justin, who's been working behind the scenes to put this together, we are starting this whole process here. So our first meetup will be in Kansas City area. The good news for everyone that lives elsewhere is that we're getting our feet wet. So we do this here. Then if we decide to do it in another city at some point, then we'll have a better idea of how we want to approach it. So we have to start somewhere. Kansas City is where we're at, and it's going to be easier to do our first one here.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say on that, Justin?
I think we've settled on a location. we've been going back and forth on many different locations because for some reason, nailing down an event room or hall or even reserving a table big enough at a bar just seems to be really hard when you want to do it, but, you know, whatever. So it's a winery. What's the name of the winery?
Belvoir.
Belvoir. The Belvoir Winery. It's off Highway 291. And it's a historic site. TAPS and other haunted investigation teams have gone there and investigated, say it is a haunted mansion or whatever. It was between that and some other places that were down in Westport and Midtown area. But between Brewfests and it just being a Saturday night in Westport, kind of didn't want to turn people off to fighting that sort of traffic and crowd just to get to, you know, a bar to see us. So instead we're renting out this room at the winery, and we think it's going to be great. What's the address on the winery?
Well, we'll have details. I would urge people, I know this sounds like a sales pitch, but seriously, if you're not on our Facebook page, might consider it, or at least drop by there. We don't have anything hidden. But definitely drop by there. We have an events page. We'll be updating that soon. But we do have the initial information up there.
Join the event if you're actually coming to the event. If you're not on Facebook and you want to come to the event or attend, please email us or get a hold of us through Twitter, just whatever. Just let us know you plan on coming. Just because I've rented a room that's a little smaller because we didn't get a whole lot of response yet, but I can always upgrade or change venues if we got like 100 people coming, if that were to happen. So please let us know if you plan on coming, and that'd be great.
The other thing you should know about the event is it's planned for November 7th, which is a Saturday night.
Yep. And it's going to be tentatively right now, I have the room reserved for 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. And there is a bar area and a wine tasting area. So we might get there a little bit early and be hanging out. So just so you know.
Okay. One last note. We're getting more shirts in now. We've had them working on some new designs. So if you haven't gotten a shirt yet, chances are we just needed to wait on the replacement. If you've been waiting on a shirt because you're waiting on one of the new designs, get ready, because next week we should have some more information on those. And I'm thinking you guys will be pretty excited about them.
Yeah. So tonight's topic, a really sad one. It's the murder of Greg Whitman. His brother, Zach, has been accused and convicted and currently sits in jail for this crime. What's the timeline here, and what happened this day? Where was it? And just let's walk through this so anyone that's unfamiliar will get a grasp.
Well, this crime took place in New Freedom, Pennsylvania, and it occurred on October 2nd, 1998. To set the scene, it happened in the afternoon, so it happened about just after school let out. The mother was at work, and the father was away in Chicago. Greg, who is 13 years old, gets off the bus and heads home. Well, he gets at his house about 3:10, heads inside. But according to the evidence, he didn't make it very far in before he's assaulted. And someone assaults him with a knife. And so he's brutally attacked in his home. Now, his brother Zach had been home all day. He was sick, so he stayed home from school.
Zach says he's upstairs in the parents' bedroom sleeping on their bed.
Yeah, he's on their bed. And he had left a key on the storm door on the inside of it for Greg so he could let himself in. I'm assuming because he might be asleep and may not know he was coming home. You know, if you're asleep, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So he's upstairs. Meanwhile, Greg's being attacked. So this is somewhere between 3:10 and 3:14, or 3:15, I should say, is Greg's being attacked. Zach receives a call at 3:15. Whether this wakes him up, we don't know. But he answers the phone and says he doesn't know if Greg's home. He doesn't think he is. And the caller is Erin Jeffries, and she's looking for Greg. It's a friend. And so he hangs up. Zach says that he hears what sounds like roughhousing.
A scuffle, roughhousing. He thinks Greg's come home with a friend and they're wrestling.
So he goes downstairs and he sees Greg's things on the floor. And he's looking for Greg and he finds him in the laundry room. And he's suffered some sort of a vicious attack. And so he calls for the police at 3:17 p.m. They ask him to give his brother assistance. So he has to go over this like doggy gate to get into the laundry room.
It's a baby gate, but it's because they have dogs. Yeah.
Right. So they're using it as a doggy gate. So he gets in there and his brother is slumped against the washer in the laundry room. So he has to pull him down and lay him flat. But he sees that he's suffered a lot of injuries to the neck area. And he knows at this point that his brother is no longer with him. And he stays on the phone with
911.
With 911 until he is notified that the police have arrived at the location. And at that time, it's 3:24. So he's been on the phone with them for 7 minutes, approximately. And EMS arrives about that time as well. So they get there. The police are trying to talk to him. The paramedic actually helps him out of his shirt.
He was wearing a sweatshirt, things you would wear when you're at home sick for the day or not doing anything, very casual wear.
Of course, the police want to know more information about what Zach knows. You know, did he see anybody? But Zach at this point is panicking. And he's
hysteric.
He seems to be becoming hysterical because he's shouting. This is kind of getting people upset because they need answers. And so they're trying to calm him down, and they get out of him that he wants them to call his mother. She's at work.
And even when he was on the 911 call, he kept saying, I have to call my mom. I have to call my mom. And 911 dispatcher would not let him off the phone. He was like, you have to stay on the phone with me. So he was just wanting to call his mother the entire time.
Yeah, that's true. He was very consistent on that. They end up calling his mother, of course. She, of course, when she arrives, she wants to see her son, Greg, and they don't let her. They have to seal the scene off. And Zach is taken to the hospital because at this point, they don't really know. You know, he has blood on him. They don't know if he's been injured.
Yeah.
It's just difficult to get information out of him. So that's kind of the beginning of this whole scene. Things don't really change much until the discovery of some items in the backyard.
So the investigation, they look at the body, they look at the injuries, they're tracking the trails of blood throughout the house, and they start using luminol, which illuminates blood, to see where the blood is, where the blood trails are. And they find bloody footprints going through the house in various directions, and they find a bloody trail from the backyard coming back into the house, actually. And where that trail leads, there's a little, I guess, a mound or something's there. The ground's been disturbed. So they look under this pile of whatever, and they find a crumpled up glove and a penknife, a folding penknife. There's blood on the glove and blood on the penknife, and that blood matches Greg's. So we know that whoever killed Greg used this knife and was more than likely wearing the glove.
Well, they find two gloves, mm-hmm. and they're athletic gloves.
Like soccer gloves or something?
Yeah, they were probably used for soccer since that was the sport, especially that was the sport that Greg played for sure. Both sides will tell you that whoever buried those items murdered Greg. So they have these prints that go from, they find some in the family room, and then they find some leading from that back area, from the that near that doorway out to where this mound is. The mound wasn't discovered before the luminol testing.
Yeah, they did not see these footprints or know the mound was there before the luminol.
They looked around. They had searched the back area out there. It's near the back of the house. There's actually like an outdoor hot tub.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of got this fancy, I don't even know what you call that.
It's a gazebo kind of thing.
Yeah, it looks kind of like a gazebo. And then just beyond that, away from the house, is where this mound was amongst these trees.
It's almost right next to the hot tub. It's not far away from the house at all. I mean, 35 feet from the door, possibly, maybe less. But this is very close. It is in the backyard. It is right next to the hot tub.
Someone actually committed the crime, left the house, buried these items in the backyard, and then went back to the house, according to the prints they found, which you should note had, according to the notes from the police that were investigating, they had no discernible tread, so they weren't shoes, as far as I could tell. And there were no discernible, like, toe impressions. So it looked to them as if they were socked feet. That was what it seemed to them when they were looking at the illuminescence from the luminol.
And Zach was wearing socks.
Yeah, he had socks, and they had blood on the bottom of them, although it wasn't soaked completely across the whole sole of the foot, but they were bloody on the bottom, and they had blood droplets on top. Do you want to talk about the knife, this knife they find?
There's a little bit of controversy over this knife. If you don't know what a folding pen knife is, it's probably one of the crappiest knives out there on the market. It's normally used for promotions or just whatever. I actually had one of these when I was a kid. It's pretty much just a little small blade that
it's 1 3/4 inches.
Yeah, it's like tiny blade, and it slides out of a plastic housing, and there's a little, it's like a jackknife, but the jackknife of the plastic part slides back into the plastic housing, thus giving it a firm handle. And it's kind of hard, but it's really simple. If you just see one, it's something I would clean my nails out with. I mean, it's really a inadequate knife for anything. The one I had as a child, I broke very easily. They know this knife was used in the murder because of the stab wounds and the holes in the shirt of Greg. They know that it's Greg's blood on this knife. Now, there's a lot of controversy about this knife because they say Greg was halfway decapitated, and there's no way this knife could have done that kind of damage. But Greg had almost a, 100 stab wounds?
Yeah, he had 65 that encircled his neck.
So it wasn't exactly used just slashing and cutting. And I mean, it was used in every single way on Greg's neck. You take any kind of metal object, shank, whatever, and you start plunging it into somebody's neck, you're going to do some damage. When I first heard the knife expert say, there's no way this knife could have done this to this boy, tiny little crappy knife could have decapitated this boy, I agreed, thinking, yeah, I had one of those knives. There's no way that can be used. But we know it was used. We absolutely know that this knife was used during the murder. All the all the blood evidence, the puncture wounds, everything. We know this was the knife.
Yeah, the wounds were measured. They match. And if you stab someone 65 times into the neck, and I've heard it described as, not to be too graphic, but if he's being attacked from behind like they believe he was, then you're forcing them down and you're pulling the knife up into them. That will create a lot of damage.
Yeah. On one side, people say this knife couldn't have been the murder weapon, but we know it was the murder weapon. It's hard to wrap your head around that. You can say it couldn't have done this, but we're looking at what it did. That's how it is. I mean, and I've seen some really crappy shanks in prison that do a horrible amount of damage to prisoners when they use them. So I can kind of get over, was this the murder weapon? Absolutely it was. It's crazy that it didn't break or shatter or whatever. Now that said, it's a tiny little knife and it's hard to hold on to. So if you're attacking somebody, stabbing them with it, it's going to slip around in your hand. You're probably going to do some damage to yourself while you're attacking somebody with it. And here we have Zach at the hospital, and they find a cut on his finger, a slash. That looks really bad to me. This crappy knife that you could barely hold on to was used in a murder, and Zach has wounds on his hand.
He has a wound and it's unexplained. No one ever says, I have not found, and I've looked as much as I can. I have not found a single explanation. I've looked into what he was sick with. I didn't find any explanation on that either. So it's an interesting case because of this, because you think this is a brother. They were close. We'd have to jump around here a little bit, but you know, at the trial, they had people talking about him and about the brothers. And even later after the trial, people have come out and spoken about them. Just 6 to 8 weeks prior to this murder, at Zach's request, he and his father and Greg went up to Home Depot and bought supplies to build a soccer net so that Greg could practice soccer at home. Greg was crazy about soccer.
Yeah.
And so for Zach to come up with this, what does that tell you? He wants to do something nice for his brother.
Exactly. He, in all the things I've seen, is they did get along.
They were about a couple years apart, 13 and 15 years old. Again, everybody says they loved each other. So you can imagine the police show up. They don't know anything about these brothers. They don't know them. And they don't know the history between them. They don't know the family. They come upon this scene. They're looking around the hallway where Greg was attacked. They believe that he walked in and had his backpack slung over his shoulder. I think it had a lanyard. The key had a lanyard. Mm-hmm. So he gets attacked and his bag goes falling. The lanyard, the key go falling. He's attacked from behind.
There's like a table or a bench or something right there in that
corner. There's a little table. It's kind of got an interesting shape, like it would fit into a corner, but it's just in the hallway. It's said that because of the noise that Zach heard, that he may have heard that table breaking. The table is closer to the door than not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's believed that that table would have broken very early on.
Yeah, during the scuffle and altercation happening right there in the main foyer or entranceway.
It's an ambush.
Yeah.
So this small knife is used to attack him. And, of course, he ends up in the laundry area, which is straight down from the door. Just imagine going all the way down the hallway, and you can see where there's this baby gate, doggy gate there.
I actually thought they had to walk through, like, a little dining area, then go over the...
but you can see it straight down. Like, if you look from the front door, you can look straight down into that.
Okay.
Another note is that the path that the person took, if you use the luminol tests, if you believe those, the path that the killer took to deposit that knife and those gloves in the ground in the backyard took a longer path than was necessary. There was actually a faster route to get to the outside.
There was a door from the laundry room that went directly outside.
Right. So there's a question of why that door wasn't used, because there was a door so much closer by where they could have immediately gone out and gotten to that same area much faster.
Yeah.
It's unexplained.
This glove, or these gloves that they found, one of the gloves had a cut in it that the prosecution says matches where Zach's cut on his finger is.
Yeah, that the glove had been cut on the same finger. I think it might have been a ring finger or something like that.
Yeah,
I can't recall. There's a cut supposedly on the same finger of the glove that finger was cut. So that's a possibility. Again, you know, the tricky part is we normally try to look through all the court documents. There's a lot of documents available, but I was never able to find the actual trial transcripts. Have you?
No, but I found the appeal and a lot of other documents.
Some hearings.
There. Yeah.
Right.
I even watched the documentary about the parents and how they're dealing with it. So there was a lot of information out there, but when it comes down to it, you hear about some of these pieces of evidence and it becomes very, very damning to Zach.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
During trial, they wanted to make some of these items inadmissible. And how did that go down? I know the defense attorney was doing what they could, I guess.
Well, so here's the thing. Anything collected at the house, the prosecution successfully says that that was permitted to be collected.
Because it was consenting to give it up, relinquish it, whatever.
Right. And you may not like the way that the police do this because they don't look at the mother and ask her, may we collect evidence while we're here? They don't look at Zach and say, may we collect evidence while we're here? What they do is they tell Zach, you know, because he placed the call to come, we'll do what we can. When they ask the mother, she says, you do your job. Well, it's their job.
Give us your shirt.
That's their job. Now, the tricky part comes in because some of the evidence collected wasn't collected at the house. It was collected at the hospital. So that's the evidence that is attempted to be suppressed by the defense because it's not in a location where that they've given consent to collect evidence at. They file a motion. The court basically says, you know, we're going to allow this stuff.
Yeah.
They appeal that. Sometime before that hearing where they can get their appeal heard, the defense changes its mind on the socks. Zach's attorney, we'll go into more of this later, but he has a feeling that those socks will actually help Zach's case. So he allows them to be permitted at trial as evidence.
Added, yeah.
And then the pants and the underwear are not allowed. Let's talk about the sweatpants real quick because we do know information on the sweatpants. I guess you could say the defense attorney kind of thought about using the sweatpants at trial because the knees do not have soil stains on them. And it was his thinking, well, if he knelt down on the ground to bury this stuff, then maybe he'd have had dirt on him. But there isn't dirt there. But there is dirt on the sweatpants. There's soil on the left leg and the right hip area. We don't know why or how, but it's soil. It's dirt.
And there's soil on the socks too.
Right. And this is something where the socks, you know, where did he get that at? Because at some point he does go outside. It's tricky. It's very easy to pick up dirt on white socks. We know this. And now the sweatshirt is also a point of contention because it has blood on it. It has different kinds of blood
splatter-ish.
Blood stains on it. Some are blood splattery. Some look like just contact. I mean, who's a blood splatter expert, right? We've talked about this in the past where you can find someone to argue it either way.
And they do. They say that if Zach was the attacker, there has to be way more blood on this sweatshirt. Meanwhile, the prosecution or people that say Zach did it, they look at this sweatshirt and they're like, okay, I do see splotchy blood on there as if Zach did move the body as per the 911 operator said. And they do see some spray. We're assuming that Greg was attacked from behind. So how much blood's going to get on a shirt? And if it's getting on Zach, if Zach doesn't have enough blood on him, then the actual attacker should be soaked in blood. If Zach doesn't have blood drenched down his pants, so therefore Zach wasn't the attacker, then you're saying the attacker is just this bloody guy now. He's just covered in blood.
Fleeing the house covered in blood. In the afternoon when all the kids are walking home from school.
This is 3:15 in the afternoon. But we don't have bloody shoe prints or even bloody fingerprints on most of the doorknobs leading to the doors or on the doorknobs going in and out of the house.
Where you would think that there would be,
yeah,
given where they say that he would have left to go bury the items or entered or left the home at out the front door. There's just no blood there.
Yeah. So it's this weird argument of, well, Zach doesn't have enough blood on him to be the murderer. Well, if the murderer is covered in blood, then why didn't he not leave a single drip coming or going?
It's kind of one of those mysteries of the case. So we were talking about how the socks were entered into evidence for trial, and that was a call by the defense attorney, Zach's attorney. He explains it later because he says that there are aspects to these socks that he finds favorable to Zach. And let's go over them. So he said, let's just say for the sake of argument that the luminol evidence is convincing. He said, if you hold up the sock, that it doesn't match what you would see with the luminol evidence because the luminol evidence shows a whole foot. And if you hold up these socks, they're not completely covered on the bottom with blood.
It's mostly, the blood is mostly up on the front, as almost like Zach was walking on his toes.
It's more toward the front. There is some dirt on the bottom of the socks. And then there are some blood drips on top of the socks. But he says that he could explain that as if, you know, Zach had bloody hands. And he thinks that because he was trembling and upset, that the blood was dripping off of his hands onto his socks. Those are two of the arguments he makes for the socks.
And Zach has bloody hands because he helped move his brother's body. I have a hard time grasping. He moves this body and all of a sudden his hands are dripping with blood so much that it's dripping on his socks. It's, again, we're trying to backwards engineer this whole scene and it's hard. But if he has blood drops on top of his socks, well, now the prosecutor is going to say, well, that's because he was attacking Greg. Who's right?
Okay, well, the difference here is that the prosecutor brought in experts. A defense attorney has the right to bring in experts, too. When his attorney took over the case from Mrs. Gutierrez, who everyone knows from the Adnan Syed case.
That's your favorite case, isn't it, Aaron?
Oh, yeah, no, undoubtedly. Gutierrez had retained an expert. But when Zach's attorney, his new attorney after they let Gutierrez go, because again, she was, I think what I understand is she was taking funds for certain things and then not using those funds for those things.
She would demand $10,000 up front to get an expert. And then sometimes that expert wouldn't be there, wouldn't be used or engaged. So we see a lot of it happen in the Adnan case where she was demanding money up front. Everyone speaks so highly of this woman, but it just seems that either A, she just had a lot of friends in the legal business, or B, she had a steep downhill fall from grace towards the tail end of her career.
Of her life.
Yeah.
The attorney that took over for Zach, he didn't really seem to knock her, but when he checked out this expert she had, he found out that the expert wasn't really a blood expert, that he was an expert in explosives. So talk about, you know, maybe she was cuckoo. I don't know. But it gave me a newfound respect for people who were saying that Gutierrez was ineffective counsel or not reliable. Because, Wow, when I was reading about some of the stuff in this, I was like, okay, that's backing up some of the things I've heard. But anyway, so he, at some point after the trial, because as we know, Zach is convicted. And since we don't have the trial transcripts, well, maybe other documents we have access to show us why. Well, one of the things that's very, very revealing is that there's a post-conviction relief hearing. I think it's in 2007. Zach's attorney that had been at trial with him says that this was a strategy. He did not bring in experts for two reasons. One, he says, because it would reveal his strategy. You know, you bring in certain experts and then the prosecution can see where he's going with his case. I know some of you are chuckling out there, and not because you think it's funny. You're probably thinking this is preposterous, and it is. I don't know how that makes sense to anybody. In other words, you have to introduce doubt on items of interest in this case. So you have a knife, or you have luminol that reveals footprints, or you have DNA tests or hair and fiber tests. Those things should all be contested by the defense if they want a chance for their client. And by not having experts, he explains it away as, well, I don't need experts because I've read enough on this stuff and I can make the arguments myself in closing. So just imagine you're an attorney trying to defend somebody. The prosecution has an array of experts. It's kind of like Justin and I doing a podcast together. Justin and I working together, we can cover a lot more information and kind of balance each other out or fact check each other while we're talking. And I know it doesn't always come out perfect, but we have a better chance of that than if I was just sitting here by myself or just Justin. They have an array of people on their side, whereas this defense attorney is almost on his own. It even came up later that there were a couple of things that he meant to say in his summary that he didn't say, he forgot. And these aren't little issues. The second one is he felt that an expert he brings in could be cross-examined and then might give damning testimony toward his client by, you know, just because he asked to tell the truth. And if he's asked a good question, says, well, yeah, this is possible and it looks bad for his client, then he's shooting his, you know, he's shooting himself in the foot at that point. But I'm sure you can see where this is going, that the attorney had this idea that if you read through, you know, his testimony, he has this idea that all of the proof rests on the prosecution. And I've said it recently. I think anymore when you go to court, especially if a young person has been killed, I don't think that it's on the prosecution anymore. I think it's on you, defense. And if you don't have that mindset going in and you lose the court case, I'm sorry, but you don't have your eyes open. You are not in this reality. The reality is that someone's going to have to pay for this, the cost of this young person's life. And it doesn't matter if it's a brother, a father, a friend. If there's any evidence pointing at you, it's on you. You have to clear your name.
You have to fight all of the damning evidence. You know, the best thing this guy did was try to make things inadmissible due to technicalities.
But not even all of it. He didn't. Yeah. He only chose a few items based on where they were, because he knew he couldn't argue the other stuff successfully. That was the feeling. That's what I gather. But so in court, he failed. He failed and his client got convicted. And you can only imagine that the family has been through so much. They've lost their youngest son, Gregory, and then their older son, Zach, has been convicted for the murder. So their family has been
wiped out,
gutted. these are their children. These are their only children.
Yeah.
They don't, this was everything, and they've lost everything. So, I mean, talk for a minute. What do you think about how they've handled this whole process?
The parents are probably some of the strongest parents you'd probably ever come across for having to deal with this stuff. And they're in the limelight. The media is covering this case. We're covering this case. It's a big deal. The fact that the same lawyer was used in Adnan's case was essentially on this case at the beginning. It brings more media attention to them. And as in most things, hate and crap of everybody out there in the world that just wants to have an opinion on this comes up and talks to the parents. And some of these people come up and just say, your son's guilty as hell and you need to just get over it. And other people just say, hey, I support you and I understand. You know that your son Zach loved his younger brother Greg, and there's no way he could have done this to him. And they take it very well. They don't attack back. They don't even really, I mean, everything I've seen is they like to state their case through what they know, what they have lived their entire life with these two children. And I think they're strong people. And I think I don't even care if you think their son is guilty or not. You have to support these parents because they're dealing with this. And as we put more and more people behind bars in America, we have more and more families that have to deal with this situation of dealing with a family member that's incarcerated. And it's a sad story, folks. It just happens. And if you're so cold-blooded and unemotional that you're just like, well, kid shouldn't have broke the law and parents are bad parents because they raised them that way. Well, it's not that simple. So,
no, I see it all the time. There's families that raise both their kids the same way, and one could turn out bad, one turn out great, or they both turn out great, or they both go the wrong way. It's... Mm. There's so many factors, nature versus nurture, you name it. But yeah, they visit their son, they say, once a week.
It's a long drive, and then they got to go to a prison, which is not a happy place. I can't even imagine. The determination that these parents show is on another level.
Yeah, they have a website. It's obviously an advocacy website. They have a lot of information that supports Zach's innocence case. They like to tell about how close the brothers were. They would go to each other's sporting events or ride bikes together. And that's how they saw them. In fact, at their house, they still have pictures up around the house of both brothers together. That's how they see them. They don't see this as a brother turning on another brother, or all they see it as is they've lost their sons. They've lost one who died, and they've lost one into the system.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
They are angry about the way the investigation was conducted. They do have people who are experts that have come out and looked at the evidence and said, I don't know how this was used against you. These experts aren't exactly saying that Zach didn't do it. What they're saying is it doesn't show that he did it.
So what are some of these things that they take issue with? I know that I've seen the knife expert that says the knife couldn't have been used to do this, but I somewhat disagree with the knife expert just because we know the knife was used, so therefore what else would have been used?
Yeah, I found the knife expert. I listened to him as well. I'm sorry, but I found him to be flat out awful. The wounds, the measurements match the knife, the cuts, the shirt, etc. And if you hold the knife right, it's not going to be in the state that he claims. You can hold it together while you're stabbing with it. And furthermore, if you're holding a knife like that, the blood's not going to be soaking up inside of there. Where there's a will, there's a way. This was a vicious attack. It's been put forth that it could have been a robbery gone wrong. If you're robbing a house, you don't nearly decapitate somebody.
Yeah,
hit. Someone attacked him to kill him. This was a hit. I don't know how else to say it.
But even the knife expert says all the wounds were to the neck and to the back, and there were very few wounds to the face, as if they were trying to avoid the face. Right there, it's like, okay, well, if somebody was just doing a smash and grab or a quick robbery, they're not going to so viciously attack this kid. Two, I don't think they would care about the face. So it almost indicates or points to somebody that knew Greg. And is that somebody, a friend, a bully from school, or his brother?
Well, I found the whole avoiding the face thing laughable. There are three cuts to the face. But the way I look at it is, if you have the majority of the cuts to the neck area, it wasn't that they were avoiding the face. They were going for the neck. This was a hit on the neck. There was a mission here, and it was damn near completed. Mm-hmm. So I get irritated listening to this. Oh, they avoided the face. They weren't thinking about the face. They were going for the neck.
As opposed to avoiding the face, they were focused on the neck, and the face merely got hit by accident.
It was in the way once in a while. I mean, you know, initially, I'm sure Greg fought back.
But regardless, the attack was so brutal that I cannot wrap my head around that this was somebody that was planning to just rob the house. There was another issue about a phone call that happened right before Greg came home, and they say that somebody picked up the phone and hung it up. And the caller says that they could tell which phone it was because of the way it sounded when it was hung up. And typically the phone downstairs has a cradle that makes a sound of some kind. And the phone upstairs is a cord.
You hit a button.
Yeah, you hit a button and it just hangs up. So they say it appears that the phone downstairs was picked up and then hung up, which would indicate somebody lurking downstairs, possibly the robber / murderer. Here I go. I'm like, one, why would the robber / murderer pick up the phone in the first place? That I can't wrap my head around that.
Well, I was thinking about that. If it was annoying the person, they would want to silence it. So that's one thing. And the only way to get it to silence across the house is to pick it up, hang it up.
Yeah. Okay.
But that could have been anybody. It could have been Zach. And Zach could have been down there and hung it up too. I mean, it doesn't exclude him.
No. Then you said there was a problem with the luminol testing.
Well, let's go through. The defense, the advocates, they have a lot of good points there's a lot of evidence here that is just plain shoddy, or could be used any number of ways. The luminol, the person mixing the luminol to prepare it, from what I understand, did not have instructions. They didn't read the instructions. They just mixed it. They had never done it before, so it was the first time. And that right there, I think, is pretty bad. In fact, I kind of wonder if that explains why they don't have complete prints from the murder scene to the backyard, where there are these big gaps. There are gaps within the family room, even.
Yeah. It's almost like somebody was hopping around, but we know there's at least blood there. Like, they did a good enough job that they did get a reaction, but they shouldn't be the one doing this.
if it wasn't mixed properly, I mean, that's what I'm saying, is maybe that's why when they were using it initially, or depending on which way they went with it, I imagine they started inside the house. I mean, it's possible that the initial use of it wasn't going that well. They just didn't know. And then they started reaching a point where the mixture was more effective and was illuminescing the prints. Really difficult to know. The other problem is that the luminol ended up in areas at times where other agents could have caused it to react. Like, out there by the hot tub. The hot tub uses ingredients, chemicals that would set off this stuff. One of the experts that's taken a look at the evidence is Dr. Henry Lee. He says that the luminol is not a confirmative test. In other words, you can't say this proves that. It's presumptive. So you say, well, I'm going to say it's showing us this based on what we know about what happened.
They wouldn't have. They would have never found the gloves and the knife if it wasn't for the luminol tracks.
Right.
And it appears that the luminol tracks are coming back from that mound to the house.
Yeah, so those are fainter from what I understand. But yeah, they show that someone went out to the mound and back to the house.
So if somebody's murdered Greg and is taking off after the murder, why would he come back to the house?
So, well, let's just keep moving on, because I don't. That would probably take us to the end here.
Yeah, no problem.
So, luminol testing fishy, but yielded some interesting results. I guess we could say, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The glove was tested. Henry Lee says that when you test a glove, you don't test the entire glove. If someone says we didn't find so and so's DNA in it, it doesn't mean that it wasn't there. It means that you put it under a microscope, you try to find pieces of flesh inside of it, or you do a swab in the area where, like in this case, where you might see a cut in the glove.
Yeah,
and you test there. So you can't say, oh, this completely excludes somebody. No, it just means that the test wasn't informative for them in this case in terms of someone other than Greg. So Greg's blood, it's tested, it's there. No one else's evidence is there from what they can tell from where they tested it.
Zach's DNA and blood is not found on the knife or the glove.
Just Greg's blood.
Just Greg's.
They also found hairs. One of the hairs, even, it's said in the report, had a root. But these hairs were sent off for testing, and from what I understand, the lab said, we can test all of these hairs for mitochondrial, but that's it. Now, mitochondrial only shows maternal lineage. So you could show, well, was it so-and-so's mom or her kids or the grandmother? Yeah, any of these hairs that they tested all showed that they were consistent mitochondrial DNA-wise with the family, with either Zach, Greg, or their mother. Now, obviously, the father, he's the paternal lineage, so he wouldn't show up.
And it was a gray hair, so on Greg, embedded in his wound.
In the neck, yeah. Right. But from what I understand, all the hairs were tested mitochondrial DNA-wise, and it could have been any one of those three people.
It's showing people that might live in the house. Yeah.
Right. So they found hairs throughout the area of the attack and on Greg. So that's as much as there is on the testing. As I said, on the sweatpants, there was some dirt on the left leg and the right hip area. Zach hasn't said very much over time, but I read a couple of his letters. He's written a couple of letters that I was able to find. He has one when The Daily Record wanted to get an interview with him. He declined that interview, but he sent a letter. The letter essentially said that he loved his brother and he would not have hurt him, and that he's innocent, something like that. Later, he wrote a letter much later that's on their website, the advocacy website that his parents have. This letter, I don't know, you could say it rubbed me the wrong way. Have you seen the letter?
No.
So we've heard this whole time how much they loved each other. I don't know. I have not lost a brother in a murder, and I've not been accused of killing anyone. But it seemed as though the more time has gone on, the less I hear about Greg. And in this letter that's up on the website, there's really no mention of him. He starts off by saying he felt like he never really had to say anything. He had nothing to say to anybody about it. He says he feels let down by the police, by the press, the prosecution, and the people in his town. That he wants out of prison and he'll take it whichever way it comes, whether they'll let him plead out or whether he gets a retrial and can win a case. He'll take it any which way. But he doesn't talk about his brother. I mean, that's the reason he's in prison. He doesn't bring him up. He just says he's innocent. I don't know what he's thinking, but you know, every day, every year that goes by, he needs to be an advocate for himself. And I, looking at this letter that they proudly have on their website, I look at it and I just feel coldness. I mean, you could say he's had a bad run. He's been in prison for a good number of years now. He's in his 30s.
Now he has a different fight. He wants to get out of prison as opposed to solve his brother's murder, I guess.
I didn't get that. Did you get that sense? I didn't get that sense at all. I just got the sense that he just wants out and he wants a chance at having a real life. But
Yeah. You
would think he would still miss his brother. I mean, his brother was 13 when he died. It wasn't like he lost him when he was 4. They had a lot of years together. They had, as his parents say and his friends say, they spent a lot of time together.
I don't read as much into that letter as you do. I think he has a new fight that he's just going for now, which is his own freedom.
Well, I read into this stuff personally because in other cases, it seems as though the people that have been convicted tend to not say much about who they murdered. That's just, it all becomes about them.
Well,
I hate to say it, but I'm getting that feeling from him, from Zach here.
Yeah. I mean, it seems weird that OJ Simpson says he's going to forever search and hunt the people that murdered his wife, but he doesn't. And here we are. If Greg's been murdered by an unknown assailant, I'm not seeing a lot of effort put forth to track this person down, just a lot of effort to get Zach out of jail. I get your point, I guess, if that's what you're trying to say.
I just think that there should still be emotion there because his life essentially stopped when he got sent to prison. I know he has a different life now, but I mean, the life that he wants back has stopped. It's on hold. And his brother was a big part of that life. And I know his brother's dead, but to just not see his name come up at all, I just found it strange. Now, his family has an investigative team. They have a lot of money put up. There's a $100,000 reward.
Okay.
They have different theories on what may have happened. One of the people that's part of their team says that the killer could have been a stranger, or Greg may have had an issue with a friend. He says that they have some interesting things that they know about, but they're not naming names right now. They're still investigating, but they have some theories about how this could have gone down a different way. So the family has support, and I really attribute that to, as we said, the police kind of sloppy. Like, they weren't really ready to handle this case, and while they did get some good hits, some of the hits seem like lucky hits. It's almost as though, like the luminol testing, if they didn't mix it right, and then we're getting kind of these big gaps between the prints and things. I mean, why would that be? And no blood on there's no blood on the handles. It's just such an odd thing.
Yeah.
We don't know who put forth this money. I think it's an anonymous donor. If anybody has a tip and they call it in, they could get $100,000 for helping free Zach from his situation. there's a tip line, but that's at zachwhitman.com is their website. Why don't we talk about what we think went on here? Because we know that there was sloppiness all over in this case. Yeah. So we could nitpick the prosecution. We could nitpick the defense. We can nitpick the investigators.
We have nitpicked it.
Yeah. And look, I know we're going to have people that say, oh, you guys are too hard on the police. Well, I mean, you're talking about people's lives on the line. But yeah, on the other hand, I know it's not always easy. You know, that's one of the bad things is you have these towns that are really safe. Mm-hmm. And the only way you get to be better at some things is, or a lot of things actually, is you have to work
practice.
At them.
That's
you have to
practice.
Yeah. And if they don't get a lot of murders, I can see how this wouldn't be so easy for them. If this had happened in L.A., well, let me, that's a bad example. That was not on purpose, by the way. If it happened in Miami,
yeah,
I think that would have been a lot easier for them. But this didn't happen in Miami. It happened in New Freedom, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Where is that? You know what I mean? This town wasn't ready for this. They just weren't ready. I'm trying to be very understanding here.
Mm.
Let's talk about what we think happened here. We'll start with the timeline again. Yeah. Greg's coming. He gets off the bus at 3:05 or 3:06. He heads straight home. The witness says she saw him walking toward where his house would be. He gets in the door. Everybody says he was attacked immediately. He didn't even have time to take off the bag himself. And he's attacked immediately. Now, yeah, Zach's upstairs, supposedly. And Zach gets a call at 3:15. Now, this is 5 minutes in.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, the phone rings. And he picks it up. And it's Aaron Jeffries.
Is Greg home?
Is Greg home? I don't think so. Hangs up. And then he hears roughhousing. So by this point, it's after 3:15.
Yeah.
So this has been going on for over 5 minutes.
Yeah.
He heads downstairs. This is not a large mansion. It's not Beyonce's house.
It's downstairs. That's all he had to cover.
He just had to go out of the room, go downstairs. And he doesn't see anybody. He tells the police that he didn't see anybody and he didn't hear anybody. He just found Greg. I don't know about anybody else, but when I read that, I got a chill because if you're hearing roughhousing just after, like, let's say about 3:16, you go down and you find your brother immediately. Where is this killer at?
The argument of Zach did not have time to perpetrate this crime, and he did not have time to perpetrate this crime with this knife, this weapon. Yet somebody did have the time, and somebody did use that knife. The evidence shows that knife was used. I can't get past that. Somebody obviously killed Greg somewhere between the time he got off the bus and got home, which I don't know how long that takes to walk home, but my bus stop was pretty close, so it never would have taken me more than 2 minutes. But, you know, we go with their timeline of 3:10 to 3:17, which was the 911 call. You have 7 minutes there. Well, somebody was killing Greg in that time. So I hate this. Zach didn't have the time to do this, but somebody did.
Yeah, and the evidence are athletic gloves that are buried in the backyard and a penknife. Now, the penknife, I don't think we talked about this, but Zach and Gregory's father used to have a business known as the Pit Stop, and it was an oil change place. And he would deal with other parts places in that Baltimore area. He would obviously get promotional items because they found one.
Yeah.
They found a red knife, similar knife, in Zach's collection, because he had a collection of knives. That was similar.
It was a pen knife. It was a different color, and it was for another automotive place.
Yeah, it was a red knife, and it said AP Long Lasting Mufflers. And the yellow knife that was used in the crime said Napa and bore the name City Auto Parts, and its address and phone number were for a location in Baltimore.
So I've heard a lot of these arguments of the gloves and the knife could not be tied back to anyone in the household. And I'm like, that's untrue. I mean, you take a sock out of my sock drawer and you say, oh, Justin, was this your sock? And I say, no. Does that mean it's not tied back to my household? It's not that simple of a conversation. You say he couldn't have killed him in this amount of time, but he was killed in that amount of time. You can extend it a little bit. They say, oh, well, the killer had a little bit of time after the 911 call to go bury the knife. Well, we could make the same argument that Zach walked out and buried the knife while he was on 911. You know,
no one was there to watch him.
No one was there to watch him.
And that's what I think is the timeline isn't exactly as they think it is.
They have a problem because the prosecution says, oh, well, after they killed him, they walked out this way to go bury the knife, and the luminol doesn't quite match the prosecution's theory. But we know he was killed in the house, and we know the knife was buried in the backyard. So I really don't care if the prosecutor said he walked out this way or that way at this point. We know they walked outside, buried the knife, and walked back inside. Why would they walk back inside if they're getting away? And if they walked back towards the house, why didn't Zach see them?
It just doesn't make any sense.
Zach doesn't see a killer ever. If Zach has blood on him, but it's not enough blood for him to be the murderer, he would have been splattered with it. Then you're insinuating that the killer would have been splattered with blood, but he doesn't leave one shoe print? Because I'm assuming the murderer is wearing shoes, unlike Zach, who's wearing socks. The logic and the arguments here can go both ways, because every single thing you say couldn't have been Zach. Then you put upon the actual murderer, but there's no evidence of a third party in this scene. There is absolutely zero evidence of a third party murder, an outside force here. And that's my problem with the entire case, is if the advocates say we have information, or the parents say we have information or evidence that wasn't in court, well, then you screwed up, because you should have put it in court, because maybe your son would not be in jail now. Also, what is that evidence? Because if it's anything short of not showing that a third person was there, all these technicalities of the luminol wasn't great, the pen knife couldn't have been used, these are just experts fighting experts, and I can't buy into those.
Yeah, when I looked over this, I thought, okay, let's make two little boxes here, and we'll throw in a little piece of evidence on each side. We have one box, we'll mark it A, and one B, and the A is evidence that works against Zach, and B that works for the idea that there's an intruder. Well, I was never able to put anything in the B box. I mean, let's look at the pen knives again. The promotional items from auto parts stores fits with his dad's old business.
Yeah.
The mom says, well, he didn't have those. Well, guess what? When I was growing up, my mom didn't have an idea about everything I had.
Zach did have knives.
Yes.
So, and Zach did play soccer, or some, you know, Greg and Zach were involved with soccer. They were building a soccer goal. And soccer gloves are found?
Yeah, this is what's weird, is you start putting in the evidence into box A, and you say, well, here's some athletic gloves, and then here's this pen knife that's a promotional item from an auto parts store in Baltimore, and you say, here are these hairs that were tested, and they don't exclude Zach.
Here's footprints that don't have shoe prints or tread marks. It looks like a foot without toes, which would resemble a sock.
It all starts to look bad for Zach. So, I mean, do I find problems in this case? Yeah, but I really, when you come down to it, it's really just Zach. He's the only one there. And with this commotion, with this big fight, and trust me, there are enough wounds on Greg that this was not a 2-minute battle here.
No.
This was a, think about it. When they say that this is one of the worst weapons you could use on somebody, that doesn't mean it can't be used. It means it's ugly. This is a very ugly, sick, vile attack. And whoever carried this out, it took them a while to do this.
It didn't take them 2 minutes. It took them 5 to 10 minutes.
I really don't understand how, when they lay out the timeline, they say, well, he was on the phone here and he was doing... No, you don't know what he was doing. You have no idea what he was doing. No one else was there. Only Zach was there. And he knows what happened.
And for the record, before we recorded this episode, Aaron and I had a brief conversation. And Aaron kind of was hinting that he was like, there's a lot of evidence pointing towards Zach. And I, just feeling contrary was going to be like, I'm going to find Zach innocent. I'm going to find everything that makes this kid look innocent. And by the time I'm done looking over all that evidence, you have those two boxes. And my box A is full and my box B is empty. Now, you can find technicalities in box A in the evidence, but the technicalities just put into question some of the techniques and processing. None of the technicalities show that there was a third person involved. And was this person in the house lurking? Did this person follow Greg into the house? We don't know. It's suggested that this person answered the phone downstairs and hung up. It's suggested that this person was there to rob the place. It's even been suggested that this person was framing Zach for the murder, which, wow, I don't know what TV and movies they've been watching, but framing people for murder, it doesn't happen that often. And if they were framing Zach for this murder, that was the most weird, ridiculous way I would ever see to frame somebody, to actually kill his little brother while Zach was home.
Yeah, and still bury the knife and the gloves and then go back through the home.
And was able to escape and get away without being seen by anyone, including Zach, who was there.
Who's not awoken by this horrible commotion that probably happened in this. The hallway's not that wide. If you look up images, I can see why that table broke, and it probably broke early on.
You know, people say beyond a reasonable doubt, and there's some problems here. And I think back to the Michael Peterson case. You pretty much got two situations. Either he killed his wife or an owl did it. They're the only two people home, and she's dead. Here we have Zach and Greg. You have to prove that somebody else did it. You can't just disprove that the evidence against Zach is bad. You have to prove that somebody else was there. That hasn't happened.
Yeah, that's the case now. Once there's a conviction, you have to show that there was someone else there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some people don't understand that.
And even if you do prove somebody else was there, you think back to David Kam, they might just say that you both did it now.
That's right.
So it's complicit. It's an astronomical, demonstrable thing you have to prove once you're convicted. And it's an uphill battle.
I think one of the things that people might do is to put themselves in the investigator's shoes, because they're looking over this and they're thinking about that timeline, and it just doesn't make sense that Zach would not have seen anybody or heard anything. And I think the only way that this doesn't go that way is if they didn't find the murder weapon, they didn't find those gloves. You could say that's part of the setup here, but you know, you still have to go to the backyard, bury it, and then come back into the house. It's just, there's no way that could have happened and Zach see nothing. I was telling you this before, but it reminded me of another case.
Oh, Lizzie Borden?
Lizzie Borden, because it was, how is this killer moving about without anybody noticing?
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a big house.
No.
It's not a big enough house for a killer to move around.
This isn't like the White House farm where there were multiple stairwells going upstairs and multiple rooms. I mean, this is...
Yeah, someone could move up a back stairwell while people are on the other side of the house. They wouldn't even know.
This is an average size house in the suburbs. And I just have a real issue that there's zero evidence of a third party here that's been substantiated in any way. I guess I can believe that Zach loved his brother. I guess I can, you know, I know that his parents love both of them, and I applaud his parents for what they do, but I cannot in any shape or form figure out how this went down any other way.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.